Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning. It's another Atlanta Legal Experts radio show today, Tuesday morning in Buckhead. My name is Emily Rowell, and I am your host, and I'm with Peachtree Offices. And alongside me, I have Ryan McPherson. Good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It is a misty Tuesday morning here in Buckhead, but we are nice and cozy here in the Business Radio X studios, ready for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Yes, me too. I'm really excited. This morning, we have Don Levine with Lyle & Levine, LLC. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we have Sarah Islami with the Law Office of Sarah Islami.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. Before we get started, I'd like to let everybody know of our sponsors. Today, we have Peachtree Offices, as always, and their website is www.peachtreeoffices.com. And we have 3A Law Practice Management, and their website is 3alawmanagement.com. We also have Atlanta's own John Marshall Law School as one of the sponsors today. And we just thank all of our sponsors this morning.
Thank them so much for making this show possible each and every week. And we can continue to invite great attorneys to come in here and share the stories about their practice.
Yes, it's awesome.
It is
thank
great.
Thank you, Ryan. That's good. I like that.
<All right.
laughs> And we will start with Don Levine. Don Levine has several life-changing experiences that led her to a passionate focus on estate planning and probate. She services the full economic spectrum from basic wills to complex tax planning and charitable giving. She finds it especially rewarding to assist with charitable giving and families with young children. A significant portion of her practice is devoted to business formation and succession and the special estate planning needs of foreign nationals. In her spare time, she enjoys spending time with her son and husband, gardening and do-it-yourself home projects. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, tell me how you got started being an attorney.
Well,
what got you into it?
I had some personal experiences with estate planning train wrecks that kind of drove me in this direction. In another lifetime, my husband used to be a school teacher, and he took a job at a Native American boarding school out in New Mexico. We went out there sight unseen. We didn't know anything about the background of the school or really what we were getting into. So we got there, and we learned that the founder of the school, a big printing house magnate, had passed away, and he left his third daughter and his wife from, I'm sorry, his third wife and his daughter from his first marriage in charge of the school. And they hated each other's guts.
Wonderful.
So within 11 months of us arriving, they had bankrupted the school and the children had no more boarding school.
Wow.
It was really disappointing. At the time, that was the only college prep school for Native Americans in the country. It drew students from Canada and Central America, Mexico, all over the United States. And so it was very disappointing to see it in that way. Mm-hmm. If the attorney who had helped found that school, helped put all of that together, had asked some really tough questions about how people felt about each other, that tragedy might have been averted. We were not attorneys at the time, and so we largely had to sit on the sidelines and just watch as other people fought the good fight. That was kind of disappointing to not be able to get in there and help.
Yeah.
And so I think that planted the seed for both of us thinking about going to law school.
So now y'all are both in law?
We went to law school. As I put it, he followed me to law school.
Where did you go to law school?
I started in D.C. at Catholic University. And then that kind of leads me to my other estate planning train wreck. When about a month after I paid my seat deposit, I got news that my mom was gravely ill. And so we had to transfer back to Atlanta as quickly as possible so that we could be with her. So we both transferred back to Emory. Emory was gracious enough to take us both under that circumstance.
Sure.
So we were very lucky. Lucky to be able to get into Emory and lucky to both be able to get in at the same time. So she actually passed away while we were in law school, and she lived in a small town and had gone to a small town attorney And I don't have a problem with that, but this attorney did a little bit of everything, nothing particularly well. And he put right. together documents that couldn't do what they said. Mm. So, again, I'm still not an attorney. There's still not anything right. I can do. I'm just a law student. But the end result was that my little sisters ended up penniless, and another family member laughed all the way to the bank. Mm. So, again, it was very dissatisfying to see that go so wrong.
I spent a little bit in the financial planning world, and I saw so much. And, I mean, I've in personal history, too, with my dad, who has a story kind of similar to that, you know, we had to end up packing up and moving to another state after I'd been raised in Georgia, mm-hmm. you know, right in the middle of high school, you know, mm-hmm. because of something like that, the non-planning situation from his business. And, mm-hmm. you know, that was a huge lesson for him. But, I mean, it just happens all the time. I could just imagine that just drove you even more while you were in school.
Absolutely. And so that kind of solidified what practice area I was going to go into. And,
sure.
And every day that I go to work, I bring a passion with me to make sure that what we went through doesn't happen to the families that we're helping.
And what year was that?
That was 2005.
So 2005, then you went on to finish law school.
Yes.
And then once you got out of law school, did you go to work for a big attorney firm, or did you start your own practice right away?
I was working with a small firm in Sandy Springs, and quickly realized, as going back to law school as an adult, I already had a fully formed idea of how clients should be treated and ethics and business experience. And so I made the leap. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful family friend who encouraged me to do that. Steve Ashby, this is a shout out to you.
All right, Steve.
And he was my biggest cheerleader, and he said, just go do it. You'll nice. Be great.
And now where are you located?
Now I'm in Marietta. That's I live, work, and play in Cobb County, but we take cases all over the state. We've got
sure.
some satellite offices in Savannah, and we take cases out in rural Georgia if there's a need, so we go everywhere.
Fantastic. Thank you for being here. Now I know why you were here so early.
That's right.
Make sure she got
She was here at the crack of dawn.
Yeah. No pun intended.
No, there was one, actually.
So tell me, what do you think is the most outrageous thing you've seen in some of the probate cases you've worked on?
Well, I will say that when you go to law school, they give you these outlandish scenarios, and you think, oh my gosh, why did they make up such crazy things? And then you get out in the real world, and you realize people really do those things.
Oh my gosh.
It's really surprising sometimes. I think the strangest will I've ever seen was written on a cocktail napkin, and it had a rusty safety pin in the corner. And we were actually able to make that work.
Really?
I was really surprised and impressed. So
I'm impressed.
It actually did work. It doesn't matter what kind of paper it's on. Some of the unfortunate things I've seen, we see a lot of online wills. And that's an opportunity for something to go really wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We saw one last year where the gentleman had put it together himself, and he had two clauses in different parts of the will that were completely contradictory and were going to lead to litigation.
Oh, no.
Luckily, we were able to do a little investigation, and we learned that one of those people had passed away, and so the litigation was averted. It was a very small estate. Everything would have gone up in smoke and legal fees if it had
wow.
gone that way.
So, wow. Yeah.
That was really unfortunate.
Are there ever some times when estate planning that you should start like really early? If you're a young couple getting married in your early 20s, is that too early to start estate planning?
I think if you're thinking about children, it is definitely not too early to get started. And that highlights another issue. I think a lot of young people live together first, and that makes you especially vulnerable because you may buy a house together even though you're not married,
mm-hmm.
but you don't have any legal rights that you have as a married person.
Mm-hmm.
So the planning becomes extremely important. We've seen several instances where people ended up getting evicted by the family because they weren't married and their name wasn't on anything. That can result in some really terrible hardships, especially if the family doesn't approve of the relationship.
You know, it sounds like there are quite a few common mistakes people make.
Yes.
But what's a good place where they call you to get educated on what they need to do? Or are these information listed on your website? How can someone figure out what they need to do before they actually make that call to an estate planner?
There's really no way to know in advance. I would say call an estate planning attorney. And if you feel comfortable with the people on the other end of the phone, then that's probably a good sign, because you're going to need to tell this person everything. You're going to need to bring all the skeletons out of the closet and sit them at the table and introduce everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be somebody that you feel comfortable with.
And doesn't that estate plan change as the years go by, as you change jobs, as you move, as children come into the out of the family? I mean, it's not something that just stays static through the years.
We try to be very imaginative when we're drafting, and very flexible in drafting. So a lot of times when we're drafting something, we're trying to draft something that will last the rest of their lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
If they know they're thinking of children, we'll draft it so that it's already in contemplation of that. Although I will say that we tell all of our clients, if you have a baby, if you bring the baby to our office, we will add their name for free. But you have to bring the baby. Shameless plot to get babies in the building.
So cute. Speaking of children, I see a case that you had worked on that basically a disinherited children were cleaning out the house while somebody was in the hospital.
That happens so often, you would be shocked. I'm sure that it would never happen in your family, but we see it all the time. We have instances where, you know, everybody's circled around the bed, the person's on their deathbed, and there's one person over at the house with U-Haul loading everything up and carting it away.
Could you imagine?
Especially if there's a will in there somewhere that disinherits that person. They will start ransacking it while everyone's away.
Oh, my goodness. And then I see also, these are really curious. I'm like very curious about these. There's a stove case.
Yes, actually, we litigated over a stove.
Oh, my goodness.
It was an old stove. It was probably worth about $300. And I actually offered the $300 to make it go away. And it, as you can imagine, it wasn't about the stove.
Sure.
It was about Mom always loved you best, and I'm going to make you suffer now. But luckily, in that particular case, the person that we were having the fight with hired someone who was not familiar with probate, and they missed a key deadline, and so we were able to make that go away pretty quickly.
Wow, isn't that so funny?
That's
just
hysterical.
How things, and it seems like you've really had things work out for you.
Yes.
It just so happens.
Yes. Well, I'm not telling you about the tragedies.
No, don't. That's so funny. Yeah, so like when I was in with when I sold life insurance, you know, there's a lot of times where a new spouse, you know, was not added to the plan, and then the ex-spouse was still on as a beneficiary. Can you tell me what happens, or, you know, in that situation?
We see that all the time, actually, where someone has gotten a divorce and they somehow in the shuffle, they forgot to check everything. And we see ex-spouses lap all the way to the bank all the time, because there's a policy somewhere with their name still on it. We see their names still on the real estate. I think there's some sort of relief that sets in once the divorce decree is actually signed and the fighting has stopped, and they just stop thinking about it because it's painful, and they never get around to doing that. So that's one of the little pieces of homework we give all of our estate planning clients. You have to, I know you know what the beneficiary designation says, but we're going to ask you to check it anyway, because you never know when maybe the company got it messed up. So that's our way to prod them to do that.
Tell me, in working on estate plans, what's the most interesting thing, or name a few of the most interesting things you've been asked to add?
Well, our clients bring us lots of opportunities for creativity. That's really enjoyable. They'll bring some just kernel of an idea, and we will have to find out how do we put that into legal language that would actually work. We had one person who their loved one in quotation marks, had cursed them out at a family gathering a decade earlier, and they never forgot that, and they were disinheriting this person. And they wanted to put the entire expletive riddled tirade into their documents to make that person know, this is why I'm not giving you anything. So we had
10
to
years.
Gently say, well, you know, we probably shouldn't put it that way. Let's do something that's a little less invasive, because remember, this is going to be a public record someday.
And sure.
Maybe you don't want to air your dirty laundry like that after you passed
right.
away.
Right. I couldn't imagine holding on to that for 10 years.
Oh, we see lots of that.
Sure. Yeah. I'm sure.
We're speaking with Don R. Levine with Lyle and Levine LLC here on Atlanta Legal Experts this morning. So we talked about estate planning and how you can prepare yourself for that unfortunate time in life. Let's talk about the other part of your practice. You said tax planning as well as charitable giving. So how much of that is part of your practice?
We have a lot of clients who want to include charities. It may be that they're leaving everything to charity if they don't have a spouse and children. Or it may be they just want to leave a small part to charity, just something meaningful. We enjoy doing that. It's almost like when I help draft that, it's almost like I'm giving as well. Mm-hmm. So I get an extra bonus out of that. Sometimes it can be really challenging to figure out, okay, do you want to give it to them now? Do you want to give it to them later? Do you want to give it to them now and have it go back to the family later? There's lots of options in charitable planning. It's a matter of figuring out, you know, what their goals are. Are you going to need this money during your lifetime? Is there someone else who's dependent on you that might need it first? So a lot of times the gifts to charity are contingent. If my child is an adult, then X percentage to this charity.
Right. And then the tax planning part of that, how does that involve the estate planning?
The tax planning is not nearly as much of a problem as it used to be. The estate tax, the death tax, is a threshold of over $5 million indexed for inflation now. So there are far fewer people who are swept into that these days. But as I tell clients, that's as permanent as Congress is permanent. So I always throw a few tax planning tools into any estate that's over $1 million. They're not automatic. I describe them as tools that sit in the toolbox in case they're needed. Mm-hmm. And if you don't need them and if your spouse doesn't need them, then they just sit there and they don't cause any harm.
That's good. So certainly it's something you should begin to plan and think about, especially if you're having a family. But I also imagine it can get really complicated when there's multiple children involved, multiple relatives at the end, and they're all trying to fight for a piece of mom and dad's money. And so how do you kind of manage that part of it when there is, you know, disagreements between all the parties involved?
I have a really big couch in my office, and I make everybody lie down for a therapy session.
And then she puts them in a trance.
Well, no. Actually, there are lots of options to do that. One of the things, sometimes we do have that mom always likes you best kind of argument. And when that comes into our office, we try to put it in really stark terms for the client so that they understand what they're risking. We can do this if you want to, but the end result is going to be that the attorneys go home with all the money and the people, and I'm okay with that if you are. And usually if you put it in such shocking terms, that will kind of snap them out of reality, back to reality a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes the person who's in your office is not the one who's creating the trouble though, and that can be challenging. If they have an attorney, I can't communicate with them directly. So mm-hmm. that makes it challenging to try to get that same message to the other side.
Right.
Sometimes mediation is the way to do that. That can be a really useful tool. Mm-hmm. But if somebody has decided that their goal is really just to punish you and to make you suffer, it can be challenging to try to put a lid on that.
Right. And throw you another curveball here. What about divorce? How does that play into this whole estate planning too?
Well, are you talking about a situation where somebody dies in the middle of a divorce?
Well, no. When a family is together, they have their plan, and all of a sudden now they're separating. And so then you've got to go back and look at that whole estate plan from the beginning. I know that's an unfortunate time in life. Nobody plans for that, mm-hmm. but life does happen. And then how does that evolve you and your estate plan?
Well, the good thing is if the divorce is final and they haven't gotten around to updating documents, then there are some protections in Georgia law so that spouse is not going to get a windfall from the probate. They still might get those beneficiary designations, mm-hmm. but they won't necessarily get a windfall from the probate. But a lot of spouses leave everything to each other, and then there isn't anything behind that, or there's very little behind that. Mm-hmm. So even if the spouse is not going to get anything, there may be spouse's family members that are mentioned in there, or there might be significant assets that just aren't covered at all. So they should go and do an update as soon as they can. And then in that brings another interesting topic, the subject of remarriage. Second marriages and blended families, his and hers and ours children, can be really, really challenging in estate planning.
Mm-hmm.
That can easily result in a set of children being accidentally disinherited. That's kind of what happened in my family.
Yeah.
Where it was a blended family, and, you know, the children were not related to the person who got the money, so they'll never see any of it. So that can be unfortunate. Ew. But there's lots of ways around that if you go to somebody who knows what they're doing and you tell them everything. We sometimes see clients come in and they've always treated this child like their child. They refer to them as their child, but legally they're not their child.
Mm.
We've got to dig and ask questions and really open up the closets and see everything in there.
Yeah, life's complicated enough, and then you get the estate planning and marriages, remarriages. It can really muddy the waters out there. But as long as there's an expert like you out there that someone can turn to keep that all planned together, then I think we're all in good hands.
I agree. And I think that it's definitely, when you said that, I thought of, you want to keep it to the professional. You know, she was saying some people do the stuff online. Mm-hmm. Don't do it yourself. You don't do that for a living, so you don't know. So to definitely look to you to do those kind of things. One last question for you.
Okay.
What is the most interesting guardianship case you have had in the past?
Well, we've seen a dramatic rise in financial exploitation of the elderly. We've got a much larger group of people who are experiencing dementia and Alzheimer's. So it's a number of factors all working together. We've got the longevity combined with the wealth of that generation, families scattered all over the country, and money as a taboo subject so that the children don't feel like they can ask their parents about their money.
Sure.
So we've seen a couple of, some of them high-profile cases in recent years where an older person, vulnerable, family not around, and somebody inserts themselves into their life, makes them feel special, makes them not lonely, and ends up with everything.
Mm.
We had a case just a couple of years ago where over $500,000 was diverted to a non-family member. And the family tried desperately to try to get that back, but there's only so much that can be done. We
right.
were able to get that person out of his life, but the assets are still somewhere else. And the only way to get that back is through litigation. And that's really difficult.
I bet.
When the person who they belong to can't really help you.
Right. Right. So, mm-hmm. What about the 6-year-old owning a house?
That was such a horrible, horrible situation. Again, it was a couple that was not married, but they had a child together, and everything was in his name, and he passed away without any documentation, no wills, nothing. And the child was the only heir, and so he was 6, and he ended up owning a house. And mom had to pay rent to live there with him, even though he was only 6, because it was not her house. And it was really, you know, there's going to be court oversight until he reaches 18. And it's really a bad situation for them because he's not able to work and make money for a mortgage payment.
No.
But yet he's got this big house that he has to take care of. So there's really not a great solution. It's just a matter of trying to minimize the damage to the family.
Right, right. Wow. You see all kinds of different things, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
It keeps it interesting, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Sounds like a country music song.
I know. My 6-year-old owns my house.
Yeah, right.
I love going to work. I never know what I'm going to see next.
Yep.
I bet. So great. Thank you so much for being on the show today. And
thank
if you will let the listeners know how they can reach you.
Absolutely. I'm at Lyle and Levine, LLC in Marietta. Our number is 770-795-4000. 4992. Our website is lylelevine.com, and my email is dlevine, that's D-L-E-V as in Victor, I-N-E, at lylelevine.com.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You did great. And just to remind our listeners, we are Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Our sponsors today are Peachtree Offices, 3A Law Practice Management, and John Marshall Law School. You can see all the websites on our website, AtlantaLegalExperts.com. You ready?
I'm ready. Who we have up next?
We have the one and only, Sarah Islami. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Sarah was born in Paris, France, to two wonderful Iranian parents. A natural businesswoman, Sarah helped run the family business at age 9, along with her parents and brother. She graduated from the Grady College of Journalism at the University of Georgia, where she was given the opportunity to work at the local Atlanta ABC affiliate, WSB TV Channel 2 News. Her interest in law began in 2004, at which point she started working at a law firm. Her interest grew into a passion to help others. She graduated from Atlanta's own John Marshall Law School and then went to work at the United States Attorney's Office in the District of Puerto Rico. In her free time, she serves as the pro bono legal attorney for Makeover for Hope, a nonprofit organization that assists survivors of domestic violence. A Buckhead resident, she is only a few minutes away from her office to meet with clients. She speaks French, Farsi, and Spanish, and also has additional Spanish translators on staff. Okay, now I feel like I haven't done anything.
Right. No, that's a wonderful bio, and you got a college of journalism there.
Yes.
So you had aspirations very young to be in media. Well, here you are, an Atlanta Legal Expert. I think you have arrived. Yeah, right.
As a lawyer.
Yeah.
So tell me, what sparked your interest and inspired you to becoming an attorney?
I always wanted to help those that could not help themselves. From a young age, I saw people around me being taken advantage of, and I never wanted to feel helpless or people around me to feel helpless. So I wanted to make it a point to educate myself and educate those around me as to what they should do and should not do. And in regards to the fact that I've lived in other countries, I really love the fact that here in the United States, we have so many more constitutional rights afforded to us and so many more avenues of relief. I know that the justice system takes a long time, and it's very long as far as your court date and, you know, all the motions and this and that. But it really is something that I know not to take for granted, because I've been on the other side.
Yeah, there's a reason for it.
Yes.
Yes, we're working through all the laws and the intricacies of the laws. Yeah. So tell me, what's your favorite part about practicing law?
Clients come to me in the worst times of their lives, for the most part, especially with my criminal clients. And, or, you know, I have some family law clients with back child support, but they come to me when they don't know anywhere else, they have nowhere else to turn. They feel as though no one listens to them anymore. They don't have a voice. So I love being their voice and helping them defend themselves when they feel as though they have no voice left.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps me because I love seeing the end result of my clients showing me that they're very thankful. And that's really what I do, why I do it at the end of the day, is to help make a difference, positive difference in their lives.
We've had some criminal defense attorneys in the past, and you always wonder, why would you do that? But they do have a chance, you know, and a lot of the attorneys love to give them another chance. Everybody gets another chance in life.
Yeah, you shouldn't be just, you know, cast aside because you may have had a episode in life that wasn't so positive. And there's good to know there's
bad decisions.
Yeah, there's people out there who are willing to fight for you and minimize the trouble you may be facing.
Yeah, so we're all human. We all make mistakes. So
yeah. So your area of practice is criminal defense. Can you tell me some other areas?
Yes, criminal defense, DUI, traffic citations, business law. I have some producers as my clients as far as entertainment law goes. And some bankruptcy and personal injury, but for the most part, it's criminal defense, business law, and entertainment law.
Awesome. And tell me, what would your advice be in telling those listening in regards to choosing an attorney?
I would say hire and retain an attorney that truly listens to you. You want someone that cares to know about your past, how it got you to where you are, and what your goals are. Because at the end of the day, it's really the client who needs to decide, and it's the client's interests and goals that the attorney has to move forward with, and not just their own selfish goals. And right. For me, I believe that one cannot understand what one has not experienced. So I just do my best to really listen to my clients and try the best that I can to put myself in their shoes, even though that's not really
what you've done in the past.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't really put yourself in someone else's shoes, but you can do the best you can.
Yeah. I feel like we've had on the show some people that, or some attorneys that say, you know, talk to a couple attorneys and then whoever you feel like you really jive with, like, for lack of a better word.
It's a good word.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
You know, that you definitely don't want to just pick the first one. And I kind of feel like it's always the same, like with doctors too. You know, you don't want to just go to a doctor because they're, you know, close by.
Right.
You know, you want to pick, you know, talk to a couple of them and see who's going to listen to you, who's going to work with you about you and your case.
I definitely agree. You have to vibe with your attorney. Yes.
Vibe and jive with your attorney. Yeah.
So go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so you being a good attorney and servicing your clients is one thing, but running a successful business is a completely different thing. So any advice you would have for someone who's making that transition into starting their own practice and how to manage both hats, you know, a business owner and a successful attorney?
Great yes, I had you. A bit of difficulty with that as well. What I like to do is I like to take my, the business end of it, early in the morning or late at night or on the weekends, like the paying bills part, the marketing, advertising. I like doing my social media on Fridays. So it's the fun way to end my week and do a lot of networking, a lot of just talking with other attorneys. Most practitioners, solo practitioners are happy to spend time with you, have mm-hmm. lunch, coffee, breakfast, and tell you how they got started, hand out your business cards to everyone you meet. But you really have to be a business person first and foremost, and an attorney as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so do you reach out to other attorneys that you mentioned that that's a good option for you? Do you have someone that's your mentor or somebody you can call when you're having challenging times?
Yes, I do. Kevin Pratt was the first attorney that I worked for back in 2004. And he still continues to be a wonderful mentor. I pick up the phone and call him with whatever questions.
He's on speed dial.
Yes.
Right.
He's yeah. wonderful.
That's
Kevin's
good.
Great.
And your thoughts more in detail on the social media aspect of it. I think we find some attorneys do not want to jump into that boat and play there. I mean, that's kind of off limits for them. But others are very active on all social media platforms. So what are your thoughts on that? How that can help benefit your and market your practice?
I like social media because I can be more creative and fun on it, but I would advise against, say, if you don't like tweeting, don't even open a Twitter page because then it's going to look as though you're absent mm-hmm. on your Twitter page. I try to stick, as for now, not with so many different social media. I have a Facebook page. I'm sticking more so to that just because I am very busy and I don't want to look absent on mm-hmm. just opening
that's some
things.
Good advice. I actually take that advice.
I think that's yeah. great. But it's yeah. good to have a presence out there on some level so other people can get to know you before they decide to pick up the phone and call you. They can see that you're helping clients and you can read about your services and your background or whatever they may be that can draw them in to want to pick up the phone and use your services. That's just a great way to reach people.
Correct. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So tell me, what sets you apart from all the other attorneys?
Well, I'm probably one of the least judgmental people that you'll
meet.
I don't like to judge people because it's not my place. It's mm-hmm. something that I like to get to know that person. And most people, they get into a legal situation that they're in for many different reasons, but regardless of what that reason is, I don't judge my clients.
There's two sides to every story.
Yes.
And then you always hear the
third, the truth.
Yes.
It's hers and the truth.
Exactly. And if you have one finger pointing, you have three fingers pointing back at you. So it's, you can't ever judge because you never know where they were, what they've been through.
Correct.
So, and that kind of brings me back to the criminal defense portion of your practice. What draws you to criminal defense?
I've always been intrigued by the psychological aspect, the psychological link between why people commit the crimes they do. It, a lot of times it's deeply rooted within childhood issues, the way they were raised. It could be neglect, it could be abuse, and it could be a traumatic event. And so I sometimes put on my psychologist hat and I really sit down with my clients and say, okay, well, why do you think this happened? What made you do this? How do you think you can change it? Mm-hmm. And I think that is really what they need. And that's why a lot of the court programs help the alcohol and drug evaluation treatments that they go through with DUI mm-hmm. or any drug cases. I think a lot of my clients at first, they say, oh man, I got to go through this. Are you serious?
Right.
But I tell them it's going to help you. It's going to help you find the deeply rooted issue as to why this has happened in your life. A lot of people, for example, smoke marijuana because it helps their anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
People that are bipolar will do coke. There's certain mental illnesses or disorders that are linked to specific drug use.
I never knew that.
Yes.
Wow.
So if you get treated for, say, your anxiety, you go to a psychologist, you go to a psychiatrist, then that'll help you not smoke marijuana and get arrested again.
Right. Have you ever had a client that was a repeat offender?
I have. Yes.
What was that like?
Well,
you feel like you've coached them and, you know, you're hoping for the best and there they are again.
Yeah. And a lot of times they've just given up and they don't care. And I try to help them be positive. I'm a very positive person. I always see the positive in everything. And I try to help them see that this is not the end all.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, I say, well, what are your hobbies? What do you like to do? Oh, wow. It sounds like you're an amazing chef. Well, why don't you go get a job at a restaurant or take culinary classes,
mm-hmm.
just something to get them hopeful again.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you study a lot in that area too, in the psychological aspect as well, just to learn more about people and how they operate, you know?
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, we're speaking with Sarah Islami from the Law Office of Sarah Islami here in the beautiful Peachtree offices on Lenox Road. You can call her or come by and see her for an appointment. Do you service the entire metro area, or what about the state of Georgia? What is your area of service?
I do serve the Atlanta metro area, and I'm actually a Gwinnett County native, so I love helping people in Gwinnett, Lawrenceville. I went to Collins Hill High School. Even further out, Hall County.
Well, very good.
I have no problem traveling.
And when you're not helping these clients and you're not running a successful business or being a successful attorney, you know, what do you do in your free time? What do you like to do to kind of get motivated or take your mind off work?
My passion in my free time lies with helping survivors, not victims, survivors of domestic violence. I am the pro bono attorney for Makeover for Hope. It's a nonprofit organization who helps assist survivors of domestic violence, help them get back on their feet, regain their confidence. We have makeup artists who we go to the shelters and give the women makeovers. I give them motivational speeches, help them with career advice and interviews.
That's very admirable. So when you're not even servicing your clients, you're out there helping others. I mean, do you ever help yourself? I mean, what do you like to do to relax?
I do a lot of that, actually.
Yeah.
I yoga.
Oh, that's good.
Orange Theory.
No wonder you're so calm, right? Yeah, the yoga must really help.
I do yoga, meditation. I'm a very spiritual person as well. And Orange Theory really kicks my butt. That's why I come in late in the morning sometimes. Uh-huh. It takes a while to recoup. So, yeah, and getting back to Makeover for Hope, we're very happy to have Miss United States 2010, Jessica Black, as a proud sponsor. She's been great.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say that helping others really does feed you, though. It feeds your soul, you know, so that does help you in the long run. And that's why you do it, I'm sure.
Yes.
One of the reasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Now, tell me quickly, you have business law also in your
wheelhouse?
The wheelhouse. I couldn't think of a good word. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I love helping startup companies and empowering new business owners. And so people come to me asking me for advice, and I end up acting as their business consultant in that end. And I've had, for example, a client who was so gung-ho on her business name. And I said, well, I looked it up. And if you, as you can see here, there's about 28 other companies that have your name. It's going to be confusing in the long run. You're going to end up dealing with being named as an improper party, but then you're going to have to deal with the attorney's fees. And you're going to have to, I know that you're really loving this name, but you're going to have to switch it. I'm sorry. You need to go home and think about another name and come back and I'll help you. So that's a part I like, is telling them the long-term effects that they might not necessarily think of.
Sure, sure.
To help them out.
Because when somebody's starting a business, they're on fire, they're ready to go, and they're not thinking clearly. So you kind of bring them back down. Yes, you're going to be successful and you're going to do a great job, but let's kind of plan this out properly in the beginning, which is important. We've talked about estate planning, and just planning in general is so important.
Correct. And I also have business owners that come to me and say, well, you know, I'm not making as high as a profit. I don't know where I went wrong. And I tell them, well, that's because your partner's cooking the books. You need to buy him out. A lot of different situations.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. You sound very well-rounded, obviously. Mm-hmm. You started that way in life. You didn't own a house when you were 6, but you worked in the family business.
Yeah.
So just wonderful to hear about everything that you do and every aspect of your life. If you can tell our listeners how they reach you, how they will reach you.
Yes, I am here in Buckhead, Law Office of Sarah Aslami. My office number is 678-510-1734. And you can go to my website, www.islamilaw.com, and like our Facebook page.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
thank
I'm
you.
Sitting here looking at the website. It's a beautiful website. A lot of great detail about the services you offer. And so definitely encourage our listeners to go there to learn more about Sarah and her practice. And if you need help, she sounds like she does it all. So you can call her up and reach out to her there. But if you need estate planning, we should call Dawn Levine over there at Lyle and Levine, because she is the expert there. So any last minute thoughts from you, or you want to share from our listeners, or again, share your website?
Sure, I'll share my website. It's www.lylelevine.com. That's LyleLevine.com.
For estate planning, tax planning, or any of those other needs there. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. And so that does it for another show.
Atlanta Legal Experts. Until next Tuesday, 8 a.m., tune in again there to listen to the show live. Or go to the website to hear all the past broadcasts or more information about today's guests, our upcoming events, and everything. So thank you, Emily.
Are you trying to get my job here?
No, I don't want to manage Petrie offices. That's your job. You're doing a great job, and you've got some great clients in here today, including Sarah,
yes,
who is a happy resident here at Petrie offices here in
she
Buckhead.
She does do a great job.
Thank you.
So,
thanks
for
home.
Well, thank you, Emily, wonderful, for making this show happen and doing a wonderful job hosting. And until next week, right?
Yes, Emily Rowe with Peachtree Offices. And again, you can go to our website at peachtreeoffices.com. And this is Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. I look forward to being the host next week.
All right, see you then.